So welcome everyone to this episode of The Pulse. And we're excited about our guest today for a lot of reasons. You know, I'm a Philly guy, Philly sports fan, and he is longtime associated with our champion Eagles. I'm never going to stop calling them champions. But he's more than that. Longtime Eagle, performer, magician. They're making a movie about his life. He's touring around, and he's got a tremendous story. We are joined on The Pulse today by John Dorenbos. Welcome, sir.
Yes, baby, yes. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
I appreciate you doing this and taking some time out of your schedule to spend some time with us. I got to start. You're a performer, entertainer, so good sense of humor, I hope.
Hey, let's hope.
let's hope. All right. So when we were talking about scheduling, and we were like, all right, so we're going to bring John Dorenbos on. And as a longtime Eagles fan, my first response was, so the first Eagle we're going to have on is the long snapper?
Yeah. trust me, you're not the first, by the way. Trust me. And I will take it, because I'll tell you this. Not only that, but I believe I'm kind of one of the first guests kind of the season, right?
Yeah.
Of the Pulse?
100%.
Yeah, I'm going to. That means right now that we are trendsetters, baby. Come on, we're setting the. I'm gonna pave the way for the rest of the guys.
I love it. I appreciate your sense of humor, but honestly, we do a lot of research when we're about to talk to people, and so I knew of long snapper. I knew of magician. I knew of all your talent. I didn't know as much about all of your story, you know. So if we can share some of that, let's start how you kind of got into this, because you're. There were challenges even as you were young as developing John Dorenbos.
Oh, 100%. I mean, life is what we go through, how we experience it is it makes us who we are. And so when I was 12 years old, I lived in a Brady Bunch family. My dad was my hero, played catch with him every day, coached my teams, president of the Little League. My mom was a hero for many different reasons. She volunteered at the school. I'm not going to say I had a learning disability, but learning for me has always been really hard. In my reading comprehension, I've always struggled. So my mom volunteered at the school, and the reading program created like this, a different way to learn. And all the cool kids liked my mom. So guess what? All the cool kids started to like me as I got older. And so, you know, my dad kind of being the president and the man of the house and showing me what it's like to be a man. And then my mom showing me that you can be different. You don't have to be good at everything like everybody else, but you still have a purpose, a place, and you can still be wanted and contribute. Mm-hmm. And so both were huge influences in my life. And then when I was 12 years old, I came home and discovered that my father had murdered my mother out of absolutely nowhere.
See, and it is, I go back to that, and I guess I apologize for starting there, but I think that it's important because that was an early start for a young man. And yet you kind of became you. Like, was that the foundation right there to start shaping the strength, the personality, the person that you became later?
Yeah, I think that was a pretty significant event at an age to where you are young enough to completely understand and grasp the severity of the situation, but also young enough, or I should say old enough to understand it, and young enough to still be influenced in a positive way, that your life can still go up or down, right? And so, you know, my grandparents who helped raise me, my aunt who ended up getting custody of me on my mom's side helped raise me. And then I went through 8 months to a year of the most intense therapy you could possibly imagine during that time. And that right there is what I think I owe, ultimately what I'm most proud of in my life. And that's just my happiness. I'm happy. I'm happy to be alive. I'm happy to be in this world. And I'm happy to continue to try and do things.
So John Dorenbos, the strong person and personality started there. But right around that time, around that age, that's when you also started with magic or performing, or when that's kind of started happening for you too.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. Wow. Bad timing. Yeah. That's when, excuse me. Gosh, you know what? Hold on. Excuse me. excuse me. Yeah. So I was actually 12, 13 years old. And I had moved down to Southern California, and then I went back to Woodinville, Washington, where I was living, and I stayed with a baseball coach. I made the Little League All-Star team, so I traveled back to play in that tournament. And when I was staying with the coach, his son was friends with a kid who was a magician. So that kid came over and did like a 30-minute show, and it was amazing. And then he took me to a magic shop. His name was Michael Groves. He bought me a book and a trick, and I just practiced it. And here's what I learned. It took me a little while in life, but here's what I figured out. That for me, magic was never about performing when I was that age. To me, when I would sit down and shuffle cards or I would do a trick, it was the only time the world quieted. It was the only time I didn't think about my dad going to prison, losing both my parents, you know, kind of selling everything, right, and going into a temporary foster home for 8 months, 9 months, 10 months, whatever it was, moving down in with my aunt, and just having a complete life-changing year. I would sit down, I would hear the cards riffle, I would shuffle, and the world quieted, and that was my time to be a kid. And that's what I got obsessed with. And then I just kept going back to the table and kept shuffling.
So that talent kind of coming out was almost therapy for you. So what we all view now as this super talent, for you, it was just coping.
100%. It was coping, and it was finding a purpose within the sound of a riffle. It was trying to find calmness. It was trying to find order within chaos. You name it. When I would sit down and shuffle, and you know what else it was? It took my mind away, and it taught me that something can be very, very difficult, but if I just keep working on it and just keep practicing over time with discipline, right, you're going to get good at it. How good you get is completely up to you, and whether you quit is completely up to you. But if you stick with a task, you'll see yourself getting better every single day.
So John Dornbos, the performer, actually happened before John Dornbos, the football player. You know, but tell us how you evolved into football, because long snapper actually came later and is a funny story.
Yeah. So I was a big kid, right? So I kind of grew, like sixth grade, I grew. And then when I got into junior high, my nickname was Ogre. So I was like the 6 foot, 200 pound kid. Then I went into my freshman year in high school, and I was still a pretty big kid for high school. And my buddy Kevin Johansson said, "Hey, you should play football." And I was like, "No way, dude. Football's for dorks. I like magic." Right. And he's like,
"Yeah, right. Things you hear often."
Yeah, right. And I'll never forget what he said. He said, "You can hit that guy and not get in trouble." Well, that actually sounds pretty cool, you know? So I didn't even know what the pads were. He showed me where the hip pads go and the knee pads, the shoulder pads. He actually drew out what each position was. And then I realized that I just go hit the guy with the ball. And so they put me at linebacker. I didn't know what a pulling guard really was until I was my freshman year in college. Like, I didn't really understand the game. I just knew go get the ball. Go hit the guy with the ball. Don't get in trouble. So think about this. I had the perfect combination. I had a lot of, you can say anger, resentment, betrayal, all these feelings that kind of harbor up just negative emotion, right? That I just needed to get out somehow, some way that I had accumulated over the last couple of years. So now I could hit you during the day, not get in trouble, get out my aggression. And then I would go home at night. I would light a candle. Yes, I would listen to Yanni track number 9, Felista, on repeat. Okay. And then I would just shuffle. And I kind of had this balance of being like a gladiator during the day, and then kind of just chill Zen guy at night with cards.
This is a true story. You really did go home and chill and relax after hitting people. Okay. All right. So there's a lot to the story. So you just kept getting better at football, kept getting better at magic as well. You played through high school. You played into college, correct? And we're pretty good at various positions, not long snapper.
Yeah. So I started varsity as a freshman and sophomore, and junior, senior. I started varsity football. We went into the playoffs. Our linebacker got hurt in varsity, and so I got brought up from the freshman team. I started varsity football as a freshman, and I was pretty good. I would say this: I was never the guy that it looked awesome. I was never the big hitter, but I was always a guy that if you threw me in a position, I will get the job done. Like, I prided myself on that. Right? It might not always look the prettiest, but I will get the job done. So when I went in as a freshman sophomore to the varsity team, in baseball, dude, I had like a 16-game hit streak. Not one of them was a solid base hit. Not one of these things, right? They would just like dribble over a guy. And like, I'd outrun like a little dribbler. But you get the job done. I could go to first, outfield. I can go third. It didn't matter. In football, it was the same way. So I thought I was a great player. I led the league in tackles, I believe, my senior year. Didn't make all league. I was super bitter at that. Didn't have any offers, no scholarships. And so I went to Golden West Junior College, who at the time was 0-30, which means they didn't win a game for 3 years. 0-10, 0-10, 0-10. So John Dornbos went to Golden West Junior College, and boom, you nailed it. We lost another 10. So we went 0-40. But then that's kind of where the whole journey started, and my life kind of took off, because I knew Golden West was going to be a stepping stone.
Right.
So I was like, hey, if I can't play there, then I can't play anywhere. Go somewhere where you're going to get on the field. You know, a coach of mine in high school and my friend's dad, Bill Simpson, was a safety for 12 years in the NFL for the Rams back in the day. And I always remember him saying, go where you can play, get on the field, you'll be seen. If you're sitting the bench, you ain't going to get seen. So I went to Golden West, got on the field, and rest is history.
That is not the story that you generally get from people who make it to the pros and play for years and have a great career. So your team was 0-40. And then at some point, what was it, a friend who said, hey, you want to be a long snapper? Like, you had not done this before, and you duped them into giving you a chance.
Well, okay, I did it my senior year in high school. And I would not say I was good, but I was the best one. A guy that just gets the job done. I could hit the punter in the waist. Sometimes it was wobbly. Sometimes it didn't look pretty, but I could get the ball back there better than anybody. So I long snapped as a senior in high school. Then I go to Golden West Junior College. And may we note that I'm a part of the longest losing streak in college football history, 0-40.
Listen, not everybody can say they're a part of history. You can.
Boom, that's a record nonetheless. and so I didn't snap my freshman year in college because we had Tim Thurman, who was a 6'6 long snapper. My best friend, Paul Tessier, who I played high school ball with, he was 2 years older than me. He went to Golden West, and then he went on to UTEP, Texas El Paso. So here's what happens. He comes back, he visits. John, we need a long snapper. Can you still do it? Yeah, dude, totally. So I go and I get the film from Golden West Junior College that season. And I was like, okay, cool. I start putting my highlight tape together, right? And I had some highlights. I was a good player. Okay. But I didn't have any snapping because I didn't snap. So I was like, well, what the heck? Tim Thurman, 6'6 long snapper. He's better than I probably ever was in my entire career. I'll just take some of his film and just say it's me. And then it doesn't matter because I can do it. I just don't have film doing it. So I'll put his highlights on there and say it's me. Oh, Nick Heinle. Whoa. I was 46. I was number 47. Nick was number 48. Both kind of stocky white guys. Nick could just – he was the hardest hitter I've ever seen him. He was the guy to this day today. He is the one player that I never went against in hitting drills. I always made sure I wasn't across from him because he literally freaked me out. I would not go against Nick Heinle, but I will gladly use some of his big hits on my highlight tape. So I did put a few Nick Heinle hits on there and said it was me. Back then you had two cameras, right? No HD, 47, 48. We looked the same. I mean, who are they to say, right?
This is so wrong. But, I mean, it worked out, so this is good. You use somebody else's highlights to get you a job and ultimately got into the pros.
But at the time, I did not feel like I was being deceitful because I knew I was good enough. Like, I could watch the film. I knew I could do it. I just needed the opportunity.
What they say in my mind, it's not a lie if you believe it.
That's right. Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story. Hey, right? No, I truly believe that I was good enough to do the job, get the job done. And I knew that right here and right here, I was the best team. I believe that I was a great teammate, right? So I didn't feel like I was lying or being deceitful. So I sent the tape. Obviously, my buddy Paul Tessier was like, Dornbos can play because he was my best friend. He knew I could play.
Right.
And then they called the coach at Golden West. The coach at Golden West was like, dude, for sure, this guy can play. Like, yeah, he'll show up every day, hurt, sick, injured. He'll play. And I then honed my skills as a snapper because UTEP said, hey, we passed the tape, and then they saw me snap a little bit. And then I kind of had 2 months before training camp after the season ended my freshman year. I was still in junior college, so I was now going to transfer in as a true sophomore. So I worked a few months. I really honed the skill. And then all of a sudden I went in as a true sophomore, and I got a full ride to be the starting long snapper. I played every game at UTEP, hurt, sick, injured. And then but here's the deal. I wanted to be a linebacker, fullback. Fullback was fun. I used to love to hit. Right. So I played fullback. I played linebacker a little bit, played fullback a little bit. So here's what happens my senior year. I'll never forget. Gary Nord comes in and Nate Poss and kind of the coaching staff. And they go, hey, John, there's interest in you playing in the NFL. And so in my mind, I'm like, I'm going to be an NFL linebacker, junior say hell, watch out. Here I come. Right.
Okay.
And they're like to be a long snapper. And I was like, whoa, talk to me. And I'm like, so what does that mean? I'll never forget this. The coach goes, well, I mean, if I were you, that's what I would do. We got an All-American freshman linebacker who's amazing. So we're good at linebacker. So why don't you just snap your senior year, which means less meetings, less hitting, I guess less practice, and a better chance to go to the NFL. Holy cow. Yeah, I'll do that gig. And then that's what I did. And it worked out.
That's insane to me. Like, this was, you're like the walking Instagram page of all those different quotes and things that you're supposed to put out there. Like, if you don't know how to do something, say yes and then learn. You know, it's not lying if you actually believe it. So here's the thing. As I was doing more reading about you, so you get there, you have this tremendous career. The NFL is interested in you as a long snapper, even though you wanted to be a linebacker. But then you go... what was it, pro day or the combine or something like that? And you were better than anybody who did it.
Positive. What is it? Intentional thinking and living an intentional life, right? I truly believed it. Now, here's one of the best stories that I wrote a book, and it's in here, and it's a great story. So I was misdiagnosed with a bilateral inguinal hernia at the end of my senior year, which means I had two hernias. And it can be misdiagnosed, not because of the doctor, just the internal swelling exceeds a certain point. And so therefore it's hard to detect, right? Mm-hmm. So I did cortisone shots in the tendons in my groin. It was so painful because we didn't really know what it was. And the pro day's coming up. And now get this, I have to run a 40-yard dash. At the time of that pro day, I could barely walk. I'm not making this up. I could not speed walk. It hurt so bad. So I'll never forget. Fitzpatrick was the scout for the Vikings. He was kind of running the pro day. All the scouts are in the bleachers. I'm getting ready to run my 40. I can barely walk. Sherman Austin, who's an extremely fast running back we had, is next to me. He's in the track outfit, right? I don't have that on because I'm not fast. So I think our trainer must have told the scout, because this is all I know. The scout got on the megaphone and said, "Dornbos, why are you running?" I was told I got to run a 40-yard dash, sir. You are not fast, nor do we care. Why don't you go warm up and get ready to snap? So, no 40? God. I don't got to run a 40? No, we don't care. You are not going to make this league because your speed. Go warm up and snap. So I said, holy cow. I leave. I'm now walking out. Sherman Austin looks at me and goes, are you kidding me right now? So I think one of the things I'm most proud of is I made the NFL, and I kid you not, I am not making this up. I have never been timed in a 40-yard dash.
And didn't have think about dude, listen. Think about not that. For and we started off with the challenges, and we'll talk about some of the challenges because your book and your tour and everything is about overcoming those challenges. Challenges aside, you have kind of lived a charmed life in those types of situations. So somebody else's highlights got you to the college team. You didn't have to run the 40 and made it to the NFL, and didn't just make it to the NFL, had an all-pro, 14-year career in the NFL.
Two-time.
In a position two-time. That you didn't want to do.
Two-time Pro Bowler.
I'm sorry, two-time Pro Bowler.
Super Bowl ring. Ed Block Courage Award winner. Walter Payton Man of the Year. Come on, baby! And most consecutive games played in Philadelphia Eagles history, which I'm really, really proud of.
And we love it.
Yeah, so...
So charmed life, doing all of these different things, the success, the long career playing football, at the same time doing magic, and we'll come back to that. Let's stay there because we'll take it sequentially. So at one point you were playing football, successful in football, and competing in America's Got Talent and doing magic.
That was probably the coolest times of my life because you meet people. Now, I will say this. People that said I could never do this, you'll never do that, don't do that, you'll never make it. Those people didn't really inspire me. Those people, I wasn't out to prove those people wrong. To me, it was the coach that gave me an opportunity. It was an owner that gave me a job. It was a coach that believed in me. Those people inspired me that I wanted to make them proud, that when it was all said and done, they would look at me and say, there's nobody else I would have rather had here than you. That being said, there was a moment when I was playing in the NFL and did America's Got Talent, that I was doing both careers at the highest possible platforms, the NFL and the number one TV show in the world, and doing magic simultaneously, both careers that a lot of people said, you're never going to make it, kid. That's why would you want to do that? You should be a doctor or, a lawyer or whatever. And I was doing both of those. And it was by far at the same time, man, to the point where a lot of people don't realize this. I did training camp. It's in Philly. And the show was being filmed. The previous year, it was in New York. That would have been so easy, right? But now it was filmed in L.A. So I had multiple days in training camp that it was 8 a.m. meetings. I went to training camp till 5, okay? Rushed over to the airport to get on the 6:15 to L.A. I had a friend with a jet that, oh, my gosh, bless his heart. Thank you so much. He let me use it quite often to be able to get there. So I would fly from Philly to L.A. I would land. I would have 2 or 3 hours to do interview, B-roll, camera blocking, rehearsal, to then be in the air by 10:30, to get back to Philly by 7:15, to rush over with an escort to get to my 8 o'clock meeting. And then I would go till 5 and then go to the airport, then fly to LA, couple hours, then fly back, training camp, and go back and forth.
So doing those things and not sacrificing any of them. So you weren't missing meetings. Yeah. You weren't you were playing at the highest level and performing at the highest level. So doing all of that and third place in America's Got Talent?
I got third. Yeah, I got third.
Only third of all the people. Only third. So you're doing that. And again, challenges, triumph, life is magic, like the nature of your book. So you're going through this successful career. The Eagles, for salary cap reasons or whatever, you know, you end up leaving our Eagles. We're going to push that aside for a second and ignore their awful decision, Eagles fans. Traded to the Saints. And then what was it, the physical that showed that you had a very serious issue?
Well, this is – so it's everything that led up to this moment, right? So the previous season, I got announced against the Redskins, and it said, ladies and gentlemen, it was the third to last game of the year. Please congratulate John Dornbos as he ties the great Harold Carmichael for his 162nd consecutive game, mm-hmm. tying for the most consecutive games played in Eagles history. So I go out and do the dance. Hey, thank you. The very next play, my wrist hits the top of a helmet. I dislocate this lunate bone. It was the last game I played as an Eagle. So I was rushed to the hospital. I had three surgeries. It's like, this is normal, and this is my wrist forever. Like, it's very little movement now. This was the worst surgery ever. That being said, they brought in Rick Lovato to fill those last three games. Mm-hmm. He played well enough. He was young, cheaper, younger. So now all of a sudden we go into the next season. I'm snapping really good. My wrist, I rehabbed it. But now you got this kid who's 10 years younger, way less money because of league minimums and all that. And I'm 37 years old, and I just got off a wrist injury. So now all of a sudden, and I probably would have made the same decision. So the team says, hey, you know, we're gonna trade you. And I remember when Howie Roseman told me, I think he thought I would be upset. And that, and Dave Phipp, the special teams coach, had been trying to make a move on me for a couple of years. He kind of wanted me out, which is cool. So Howie Roseman comes up to me and says, we're going to trade you. And I said, you're going to what? Mr. Eagle. Wait a minute. Right? Wait a minute. Did you say trade? Because I've never heard of a long snapper getting traded for. I said, Howie, has there ever been a long snapper traded for in the history of the NFL, or am I going to be the first? And he looked at me and he goes, gosh, I don't think there's ever been a long snapper traded for, let alone a draft pick. I said, a draft pick? I wasn't even drafted coming into the league. You're telling me now that there's a team that's willing to give up a draft pick when I'm 37 years old? Let's do it. And so in therapy, I learned.
You're like, look, they're going to trade for me. I'm good. Like, my value is still there. Let's go.
I mean, I'm going to be the first long snapper traded for. You know what it is? In therapy, when I was younger, I learned this, right? This is one of the most valuable lessons I learned. Come to terms with your reality, have forgiveness, find happiness. You get those three things in order, you're good, because things don't always happen the way we want, right? Things don't always happen the way we plan. This was my reality. This was happening. So I could either fight it and be bitter and miserable, or I could say, this is it. This is my life. I'm going to embrace the good. I'm going to thank the good, right? I called Jeff Lurie. I said, hey, man, I love you, man. He said, this is the hardest part of the job. You've been like family to me for a long time. So it is what it is. I go, Jeff, it's all good, man. Thank you for 11 and a half of the best years of my life. And now it's time for me to go start a new chapter and hopefully get to know a new fan base. So what happens is they trade me.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden I do a physical and they hear a little heart murmur. For those that I had heard all these terms, but I didn't really know what it was. For those that don't know, a heart murmur is just a leakage of blood. And so when they put a stethoscope on your chest and you go like that, your heart is like a drum and it's like boom, 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 boom. When they put the stethoscope up and they say you have a murmur, they're hearing a squish sound. So it depends where the squish sound is depending on where the leak is. So you might take a deep breath and they hear ksh, boom, boom, ksh, boom, boom, or boom, ksh, boom, or boom, boom, ksh, boom, boom. Ksh. That squish sound is not a good thing. It means blood is leaking somewhere. Okay. So they heard it in the wrong place. They heard a murmur in the wrong place. And they were like, we're going to have you go down and get an echo. And I did. I got ready for practice. And I came back from the hospital and said, hey, we're going to go do more tests on you. Okay. Come back again. Get ready for practice. And then they said, I got a phone call and it said, hey, you're never playing football ever again. At the time I was 37, signed a 3-year extension for millions, more money than I'd ever seen, right? People were calling me Pops. I was playing with Drew Brees. I was on a team that wanted me. It was just, I was going to be endorsed 13 games. Are you kidding me? Like, get me out of the Northeast at my age grade. All black uniforms, slimming. I still wear all black, slimming for an aging, pudgy guy. So,
all positives.
All positive, right? And they said, you're never playing football ever again and you're going to be in emergency open heart surgery in the next 48 hours.
Is it an overstatement to say that that trade potentially saved your life? Like, this was a life-threatening thing that they found in this physical.
I would say that it is 100% that trade saved my life. Wow. John Ritter, a famous actor and TV host, Alan Thicke, Bill Paxton, these are all people that died of the condition that I had. And what it is the emergency part of my condition was I had what's called an aneurysm. And the way to think about an aneurysm is you have a snake, and a snake eats a deer. And when the snake eats the deer, where it is in the stomach, it like blows up really fat in the snake, and then the snake goes back to normal. Mm-hmm. Well, that part that kind of blows up is called an aneurysm. So the vein that leaves your heart is called an aorta, or a vein, a layman's term. And right where it hits the heart, that thing that's supposed to be the size of a dime or a nickel, it started blowing up like a water balloon. And my part of where the vein hits the heart got to be the size of a soda can. So it should have been this big, and mine was that big.
Wow.
If that pops like a water balloon, it's 2 or 3 seconds of the worst pain ever. And then you could be on a table in surgery. If that ruptures, you're dead. There's no coming back. Jeez. And so I was one hit away.
And yet this positive person. All right. So we've gone through that, how you got here, the football, the touring, the magic, but right now, so the football career is over, but you are healthy. But the touring, the magic, the performance, you're still doing that. Is that the thing that you get the joy from now? Like, what's bringing you joy at this moment?
All right, you're going to laugh at this, okay?
Okay.
Every year I played in the NFL, I thought I was getting cut. Every year. So what happens is, when that season was over, I was like, oh, all right, that was fun. I'll go perform and figure out my life. And I would go do that for a few months. And then all of a sudden, April would come, and I'd get the letter in the mail that says, hey, can't wait to see it the offseason. I'm like, oh my gosh, they're still going to keep me? All right. So then I would do another year, and then another year, and another. And 14 years went by. I attribute my career, I kid you not, to balance. That I had a life after football, that I wasn't worried about figuring out how I was going to make it, because I had something that made me happy. I had purpose. And that was performing and speaking. And it's something I love to do. When you take that pressure away, I played football because I loved it. I played football because I loved being around the guys. I played football not because I had to, not because I didn't know who I was without it. I just loved it. I loved being around it. And I got 14 years because that pressure, like, cut me. Okay, cool. But I played relaxed, right? And so I've always loved performing. I've always loved I do more speaking for like big, you know, conventions and companies. I do more keynote speaking than I do probably theater performing. Okay. But it's really cool that the 60-minute keynote that I usually do is actually almost 90 minutes of my theater show. So it plays in both spaces.
You know, it's amazing because I absolutely get you doing the motivational speaking and talking to people, because you've overcome so much that you continue on and people see your story and like, huh, if you can overcome all of that and achieve that level of success. So here we are today, and I want to talk about, you got a book that's going to be turned into a movie. But John Dornbos, no huge surprise that a fire breaks out in front of you.
Ooh.
You know, and that's, I mean, I guess it's something that we can kind of talk about. There's nothing lighthearted about it, but the person's going to be okay. So that's a positive. But how does that happen? You just happen upon a fire.
Yeah, so there was nobody outside. So I live in Southern California, so there's a lot of like outdoor malls and shopping areas. And there was a Trader Joe's grocery store. And then down this corridor, there's a few small businesses. Then this vegan Japanese restaurant, a couple doors down was a restaurant my wife and I were at. And there was nobody outside. So we go to the Trader Joe's. My wife says, we got a babysitter. Let's do adult things, which means let's sit on a patio and have dinner as adults.
Right.
And I said, okay, I'll put the groceries away. If there's a spot on the patio, we'll do it. The spot on the patio is open. So I go put the groceries away in the truck, and I notice a big blanket. Ha! If mom's warm, right? If wife's warm and we're sitting on the patio, then dad gets to stay outside, which I'd rather be outside and be cold. So I bring her the blanket to keep happy wife, happy life, keep her warm. Mm-hmm. Well, a couple doors down, another family sits down at the Japanese vegan restaurant. And then a few minutes later, my wife and I hear a scream that we both thought that there was a fight broke out or somebody had a gun. And so we both kind of stood up to just kind of assess the situation, make sure we're safe. And in about that 2 seconds that I stood up and turned around, the waitress, her apron went from on fire to her completely engulfed in flames. Mm. And what happened is her apron hit a little box heater that was on the ground that they had outside for their customers. And I was told that she makes her aprons out of her, you know, she makes them herself. So my guess is the apron was made out of like a polyester or a cotton that just went up in flames. So she panicked. Now, because of COVID, there's no tablecloths outside. So now all you have is a couple glasses of water. Nobody's outside. It's a mom and pop. The husband is the chef and the wife is the waitress. So now he's in the back, has no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And she then panics, starts running around and spinning, and she starts running away from the restaurant, which now is adding oxygen to the fire. And when she would put her hands over her head and run, the flame was over her head. So I look at my wife. I took my jacket off. I grabbed the blanket off her and just ran over to her, threw the blanket on her face to kind of keep, because her hair was on fire, but her face wasn't on fire. And so tried to pat it, didn't get it. And then I guess I just completely tackled her, wrapped her around, rolled over on her, and we got the fire out. And then when she kind of rolled over and she was on her hands and knees, her clothes were completely burned off. Her skin was melted off her legs, her feet, her butt, her lower back. She just got released from the hospital. It's been about a month and a half. She had four or five surgeries, major skin graft surgeries. Veggielicious US is the Instagram. They posted all the pictures updating. You can see it, her recovery. They have a GoFundMe. I didn't know these people, but people started coming out and said they're the nicest people in the world. And so people are helping them out. And obviously they're going to have a lot of bills and the insurance covers a little bit, but I'm very proud to say that her face is okay. She is alive. She's a wife. She's a mom. She's a friend, and she will live. So
you just sprung into action because you saw it and somebody needed help.
You know, and this is going to sound kind of cliche and maybe cheesy, but I think one of the things I'm most thankful for about playing in the NFL is playing for guys like Coach Reed, who instilled in you the ability to speed your body up and slow your mind down when pressure hits, and the ability to just act, right? You know, you talk about quarterbacks like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. You know what I respect the most out of those guys? Their ability to see things under pressure in 2 seconds. Dude, you ask Tom Brady in 3 or 4 seconds, he'll tell you what all 22 people did on the field, and it's going a million miles an hour, right? So something that I'm really proud of, and I tell my wife this, hey, when the you-know-what hits the fan, guess what? Your mind slows down, your body speeds up, you make decisions to save lives. That's what we do. And, you know, we had a choking incident with our daughter choked a couple months ago on a piece of watermelon I gave her, and boom, flip her over, tap her, hey, stay calm, right? Speed, you act fast, think slow, and I'm really thankful for the training that I had to be able to think under pressure. It's been a game changer.
With everything you've been through, just a few more, I appreciate you taking the time that you're taking with us, but everything you've been through, you're now moving around, you're speaking, you're appearing on TV shows. There is the book. But it has not been all good. As much as you're so positive and inspiring people, there have been a lot of challenges, and we've touched on some of them. Why are you sharing your story with people? What do you think they get from hearing your story?
You know, I it kind of happened gradually, and I was a rookie with the Buffalo Bills, and a speaker named Kevin Elko said, hey, you're the Magic guy, right? I go, yeah. He goes, hey, I do a lot of sports stuff. I work with the Bills here. I'm speaking to these bankers. Will you tell your story about how you got into college? And he goes, will you do that stupid pencil trick and the $100 bill thing you do? I go, I think it's cool, but yeah, I'll do it. Yeah. So I did it. And then after it's done, I'll never forget. He looks at me and he goes, hey kid, the magic's cute. You need to be a speaker and do whatever magic you want. You need to be a speaker. Yeah. So he kind of groomed me, got me in the speaking industry. And then a couple years into my career, I got this a lot. Away teams would call. So let's say I'm with the Eagles and we're playing the Bengals. Well, a representative from Cincinnati would call and say, hey, we got these two kids and the mother killed the father. Hey, we've got these four kids. The father killed the mother. Hey, we've got these three kids and the stepdad killed the mom, right? Would John come in and speak to these kids for a few hours on Saturday when you guys land? We'll bring him to the hotel. And so now on my away trips, I would sit in a hotel room with these kids. And I don't think anything felt better than to be the person in that moment, to be able to look at these kids and probably be the only person they'll ever meet that has been through it and is genuinely happy, regardless of what you define success as, right? I'm happy. Yeah. And I would look at these kids and I'd spend hours with them and I'd talk to them and we'd cry and we'd laugh and I'd tell them the things that I learned. And I was, it made me so proud to cry with them and say, hey, just don't ever not believe in yourself. And if you want to cry, cry, you want to laugh, laugh, and just do these things, keep with the process. And I promise you that one day you'll be happy. I promise you, you'll do everything in this world you want to do. You'll see your mom and dad or whoever was murdered that they wanted to remember. You'll see them everywhere in the world, in the birds, the trees, the rain, and you'll be able to be a parent to your kids one day if you adopt or have kids. You'll be able to be the parent you never had, and that's the moment you should live for now. And that's kind of how it all happened. And then all of a sudden you realize that there's a lot of people that just need help, right? They're embarrassed about their situation. They don't know where to go. They feel stuck. And so what I found is that when I tell my story, whether it's, you know, this event I went through or this one or this one or this one, walls start coming down and people start not feeling alone. And when people don't feel alone or embarrassed and they see that I could do it, in their mind, all of a sudden, when I tell a story, they instantly reflect on something in their own life. And they instantly reflect on what I was feeling, what I did, and how I found happiness, and maybe how they can implement that in their own life and how they can resolve an issue. And that becomes a really cool thing. And then it makes me feel better about myself and my situation. And it helps them and me.
Life is magic. So it's out now. people can get a copy of the book. You're touring, so people can, here you go, hold that up. Product placement. You're touring, so people can also see your performance, and they may hear you speaking. I guess the last thing I kind of want to touch on. So big name producers now have taken your story and are going to turn it into a movie. Like, how's that feel?
Yeah, it feels amazing. Mike Tolman, who did the Last Dance on Netflix about the Chicago Bulls, he did Coach Carter, he did The Rookie, a bunch of 30 for 30s. And he's a Philly guy, diehard Eagles fan, Sixers fan, Phillies fan, and just a great dude. My friend Riley Smith was the number three on the call sheet for the movie Radio. And he said, you got to meet this guy Tolman. This was 15, 20 years ago. I met Mike as a friend, and I was like, you know what? And Riley's like, Mike, you're going to do John's life. And we're both like, yeah, okay, cool, whatever. And as I just got to know Mike, we just became friends. And in my head, I was like, you know what? If anybody ever does my life, that's who I want it to be. So we wrote the book, and then he picked it up. And then John Gatens, who got an Academy nod for the movie Flight with Denzel, said, I'd like to write that script. And so John wrote it. The first draft is done. So the development funding came in really quick. The first draft of the script is done, and now they're going back and kind of just tweaking it. And then we're excited. We got some big, big production studios that want to get money behind it. I think this is important to say is that it's not a sports movie. It's a movie. The most important thing about my life is that when you come see my show, I promise you, you're going to laugh and you're going to be inspired, because it's my life story with the magic I learned along the way that got me out of bad situations to find happiness. And ultimately, it's a show, a journey, and a story of how I ultimately, when my wife got pregnant with my daughter, I ultimately sat down with my dad 28 years after he killed my mom, and had the first conversation with my dad a month before I was about to be a dad. And so the book is everything leading up to that conversation and what that conversation was.
John Dornbos, I appreciate you spending some time with us. I feel like it's a good thing that we weren't in person, because when I introduced you as John Dornbos, long snapper, I probably should have gotten slapped for starting off that way, now that I'm hearing the whole story. But I appreciate you sharing it, man. It is inspiring. And thank you for spending some time with us on The Pulse.
Hey, of course. And everybody out there, remember this. It doesn't matter what your situation is. Don't let it define it. Don't let it define you. Let it refine you. Come to terms with your reality. Remember that forgiveness is for you. It's not for anybody else. It's not about winning and losing. It's about you coming to terms with what your situation is so that you can find happiness, so that you can make this world a better place. And to everybody out there, I'm going to tell you right now, thank you for making the world a better place, not just for you and I, but ultimately you're making the world a better place for my little girl, Amaya. And for that, we are forever teammates, and I appreciate everybody.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you. Thank you so much for spending some time with us on The Pulse with Bill Anderson. The story of John Dornbos is so inspiring. It's one of those things where I sat back and really enjoyed it because of all the things that he's been through, and yet he's still smiling. He's still sharing with people that life is magic and spreading that message as much as possible. That's what we try to be about on The Pulse. I absolutely enjoyed it, and I hope you did as well. Remember, if you ever want to watch the TV show, if you're in Philadelphia, The Pulse airs Mondays at 6:30 on Fox 29. And then nationally, it airs Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Fox Soul. So you can always check it out. Make sure you subscribe to The Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast. And we'll be back again, same time next week.